Welcome back, WNST Towson, Baltimore, WNST.net. This is not really WNST right this moment. It's going to be Baltimore Positive. We're launching our new website, our new podcast, our new initiative to make Baltimore a better place. And Don Moeller joins us, former Baltimore County Executive. He's going to be my, I say Kemosabe, but I am your student. You know, you are the Yoda. I am, you are the webmaster. I met you on the first day of my high school experience in August of 1982.
You always love to tell that story to make us very, very old people. You bring it up all
I'm bringing
of the
it
time.
Up as the, like, they say, how do you know Moeller again? He's
right,
like Catonsville
right.
And you're Dundalk.
And,
like, how would you guys be sitting together at Ravens games for two decades? But here we are. And this Baltimore Positive thing. So, first off, I have incredible gratitude for you and anyone else that wants to participate in this process that I have found to be a calling to me in the last couple of years in the aftermath of Freddie Gray and the riots and the fires that I saw from the sky where I live, and I recruited you. You're my first recruit, so I know. Tell everybody why you're involved, and then let's get into this.
Yeah, let's turn the tables a little
sure.
bit. You're usually the guy doing the interviews, and today we're going to flip that around. And
well, you've hosted a few shows in your day.
A few shows. Been involved, again, very, very old, going back to the 1980s. But, you know, a number of months ago, you came to me as I was completing my term as Baltimore County Executive, finishing the term of Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz. By now, everybody knows that tragic story. And here you are at 50 years old.
I wasn't 50 yet.
Almost 50, but now you're 50 years old. And you said, Don, I want to do something different. I don't want to leave sports totally behind, but at the same time, I'm at a point in my life where I have to make a difference. And I'm thinking about doing something to promote Baltimore, to talk to people who care deeply about Baltimore. In my mind, I'm thinking it's Baltimore Positive. And you
well,
said
we started
to me,
Be More Positive
be more
with
positive.
My wife, right?
Correct.
So Be
Correct.
More Positive became the hashtag that we used from the hospital because her blood type was B positive. Be positive.
Right,
so
right.
Be more positive. And I took an Uber ride with a man from Africa the first day she was in the hospital. The first morning I was shook up. I got to driving over there. In the beginning, I wasn't sure I could drive, literally. And I didn't really want to drive. I just kind of wanted to, like, get my backpack and go over and fight. It felt like a battle when she was in the hospital. And I had a driver from Ghana looked to me in the back seat, and he said, "My friend, you must always be positive."
That sort
you
of says it all.
Positive. So the positive and the blood type and the B more and the Baltimore and the fact that I walk through the city and I live at the harbor and we post pictures, and anybody that knows me knows that I have no problem selling the authenticity of loving Baltimore. And, you know, that's been my issue with the baseball team and in sports. And when I get on the wrong side of people, I think you can look it up. They've been on the wrong side of Baltimore. You know, if you're not making Baltimore better, I live here and I work here. Every business I've ever been associated with is here. Every person is here. And even Catonsville people and Dundalk people who voted in Baltimore County, you know, most of all of our lives, and I've lived in the city for 16 years. My mother died a year and a half ago, and I would vote with my mother, and I still own property in Baltimore County. My business is in Baltimore County. You would say, well, the city, that's their problem, you know? And I think what really started this was on the backside of my wife's illness. We were away for the very first time after she survived the first time before I did a baseball tour. It was in April of 2015, and we landed, and as we had all our phones off, and as we were landing, my wife put on her iPad on the airplane and got the Wi-Fi and saw that there was unrest in Baltimore. And I'm talking about, like, we're an hour away from landing on Monday night. So we had no idea anything happened to Camden Yards, no idea the city was having trouble. And we landed, and I had 20 messages from people like you, my son, saying, "You can't go home." And I'm like, the hell do you mean I can't go home? My cat is here. It's my home. What do you mean I can't go? City's under lockdown. You come to our house. I'm like, my cat is at my condo. I'm going home. And we came home that night. It was also game 7 of the Islanders and the Capitals. So I wanted to get home to watch game 7. And we had been at the beach for a couple of days, and my wife was still struggling with her health. And we came home and came into my condo, and my condo's on the 23rd floor. And I look out over the city, and I saw the smoke smoldering to the northwest side, and then I saw a flame shoot up on the east side, 5 stories high. Had pictures, video. City looked like it was on fire, it was under siege. And I started to think about, like, getting my cat, putting her in a bag. What would an exit strategy be if I had to leave? I had to think about that.
And
by the way, here's the rub, and then you can get to whatever question you want. The next morning, I went on the radio, and I set up this studio, and I looked out the window, and I said, well, let those people, the black people, the white people, the right people, the left people, the police, Marilyn Mosby, the mayor, the government, I'm going to stay out of this. You know what I mean? I'm going to keep my mouth shut. First off, to learn more, because I really had no idea other than what Don Lemon showed me on CNN and Fox News. Everybody's showing up, and everybody had an opinion, and there was video. But I had no idea what was going on, and I kept my mouth shut. And I thought, they'll sort it out. They always do. Let the politicians sort it out. And 4 years later, I can't sell my condo. My wife can't walk down the street after dark, and we got to do something about it. And that's how I feel. I mean, I and the motorcycle brigades on weekends taking over. We got to do something. Squeegee boys. We got to do something about it.
So when you came to me months ago and said, Don, I want you to join me in this venture. I want you to join me in getting this venture called, which at the time was Be More Positive, evolved into Baltimore Positive. The appeal was that people have to stand up and have to make a difference. That you and I have talked about it until we're blue in the face, that we can't and should not wall off Baltimore City. It's a great city. You love the city.
I have been in the last 5 days with business partners of mine, people who own significant businesses and own businesses. Every business is significant. Ask anybody that works there, right? So I've talked to several friends of mine in Pasadena, not to out any specific place, but I'm talking about a place that's 12 miles away from where I'm sitting right now, which is 2 blocks away from Camden Yards. And I was in Bel Air, and I will be in Bel Air for the NFL draft up at Silver Spring Mining Company, Gary Risling, great friends of ours. And so I was in Harford County the other day with a business leader and friend of mine, and I hear the echoes, and here's what I hear. I don't go downtown anymore because squeegee boys keyed my door. Don't like squeegee boys. Can't park. Got accosted parking. Had a bad experience. Don't feel safe. Can't get affordable parking. My favorite restaurant isn't there anymore. The Ravens took a knee and I'm pissed and I'm not going to Ravens games. I hear all of that from the county. And then I hear East Point Malls had 26 arrests on the weekend. And I think to myself, you think you're immune? You think you're going to go into your cocoon in Carroll County or Harford County or Howard County or to your duplex somewhere out in Odenton and just walk away from the city and that's going to work? It's not going to work. I mean, Baltimore's the aorta. As it goes, everything goes. And Baltimore's a spoke and a wheel. It's always been supported by Catonsville, by Towson, by Dundalk, by Bel Air.
Listen, Baltimore, and then we want to get a little bit. We want to introduce you today to people who might not know
Nestor Aparicio. Well, I am a little angry about this.
I mean, I get it.
And I think every citizen, as the FBI is raiding our mayor's place, as literally as we record this, right, there should be some useful outrage. I mean, I'm not talking what we saw here 4 years ago. I'm talking about a real movement and a real open conversation to say, I live here. I'm invested here. Like everybody else, I'm underwater here because I'm invested here. Because right now, we're not perceived as a place people want to come. And that's up to us all. 600,000, or is it below that yet? Is that where we are?
602, which is...
Let's not get below 600,000.
Pretty frightening when you think about it, but...
How many people are in Baltimore County?
Just about 840,000. So
the county's much, much
bigger than the city. About 250,000 more than the city. And again, but what we want to do, and the thing that I found appealing in this effort, Nestor, is to try to bring together people and have discussions with them about getting these perceptions, and not only perceptions, some realities turned around, because we know Baltimore City can be and Baltimore City must be better than it is. So that's what we're going to be trying to do. We're going to roll it out, as you said, on May the 2nd at Pizza John's. I have my Pizza John's cup right here. Well, we're going to have one of the outstanding leaders throughout the nation, certainly in the state of Maryland for decades. Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger is going to join us on May the 2nd. Hope folks will come out, meet Dutch. And really, Dutch has been involved in these issues forever and is a really strong voice about local government and how it can work.
How can you be pro-local, pro-something, and anti-Baltimore?
You can't.
I don't think you can be.
You can't.
I think that is a message that has to be heard by everyone. And I get it that, you know, if you're not coming downtown right now and you're it needs to be temporary. You know, we need to do something, whether it's Light City, the Ravens. This has always been my pitch with the Orioles. So for anybody out there with the Orioles, oh, it's personal. It's not personal. I've seen the city get emptied out during not just my lifetime and my time downtown. You know, I thought about this with Baltimore City because I've lived here 16 years. When I first started working in Baltimore, it was in 1984, and I would take the 23 bus downtown as a 15-year-old when you told me I was going to be the next Chris Thomas, and I would walk down South Street to the News American in 1984 and 85, and then I worked at the Baltimore Sun in 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. Then in 92, I moved down the Light Street to 5 Light Street, which is now an all-new building where the McDonald's was. And my first broadcast studio, you came down there to WITH, 5 Light Street.
Remember it well. Sports Huddle.
My first broadcasts were in December of 91 with Kenny Albert, who's calling hockey games this time of year. And I took a selfie with him the other day. He was on TV. So I've spent every working day of my life in the city. We went from 5 Light Street. I went to the garage in Timonium for about 4 months in the summer. You remember we broadcast from the garage?
Yep.
right by the Royal Farms, right by Michael's Cafe, right by Curio, right around Timonium Road back in the neighborhood. And then we moved back downtown to Lord Baltimore. I remember you coming down to Lord Baltimore on the third floor. We were right off the ballroom at the Radisson Lord Baltimore. And I broadcast from there in 93 because I was there for the All-Star game. 93, 94, 95. And then we moved to the Sheridan. So I worked downtown from 84 to 96. And then obviously we were downtown all the time, 96, 97, 98. The Orioles brought me downtown. 55, 60 games a year. How many games did you go to in the mid-90s?
30, 35.
Okay, so, I mean, the nights you're downtown, whether it's Fed Hill, whether it was the Baja Beach Club, whether it's Ruth's Chris, the things that we all did in and around Baltimore, that disappears when 3.6 million people stop coming in,
right,
45,000 strong, 80 times a night. Or 80 times a summer, I should say. And now, you know, they've been home all week, and we've had crowds literally of less than 5,000 every night.
Listen, I want to get a little bit to your background, but when you talk about that, you talk about the city, again, I always go back to my friend Kevin Kamenetz and the stand that he took after the whole Freddie Gray situation, when he went back out and really made a conscious effort to say to Baltimore County citizens, look, we have these great museums. We have these great sports teams. We have this incredible zoo in Baltimore. I need you to get back down there. That's how important the city is. He would say that Jill and the boys and I, we love to go to the Walters. We love to go to the BMA. We're going to the zoo. Get
aquarium,
back down.
Science
the aquarium,
science center. Little Italy.
So we're hooked at the hip. And those
are
the stories. And that's why it was so disappointing. You mentioned East Point. That's why it was so disappointing this past week when a Baltimore County councilman wanted to point the finger at Baltimore City. again, suggesting that somehow we wall the city off and then we won't have problems at East Point. That's not true. We're joined at the hip. I'll say it over and over and over again. These are regional problems. We have to address it. You and I hope to tell some of those stories. Now, as you know, when we talk with folks, we have some great guests that we're going to be rolling out on Baltimore Positive. But when we talk with them, one of the things that I want to explore, because I've always believed that we really are who we are based upon, in a large part, about how we grew up. So,
we are a real town of neighborhoods.
Right, we're a town of neighborhoods. Right. And I think it's what we learned.
More so than a lot of
for
places.
You. I mean, some people know your story, but not everybody does. Talk a little bit about growing up in Colgate and growing up with a mom and dad who adopted you. And what lessons, I mean, over the years, you've talked about your mom. Everybody got to know your mom on social media. You've talked about your dad and your dad coaching Little League and taking you to ball games. But what lessons did you take away that really are central to who you are now as a 50-year-old adult?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me that I've learned is my parents were born in 1919, right? So my father was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and stood in soup lines, literally had no food. So, and I'm talking 1929. I'm talking stock market crash in that era. And so my father was always very involved in politics that I didn't realize that in 1976, we campaigned for John Coulihan against Ted Venatoulis, right? Mm-hmm. So I was at a party last week, and I saw Ted.
I was very involved in that race.
Were you? Yeah. What did you do in that race? Tell me about that. So I was 8 years old. So just to give you an example, and my dad went up to Colgate Elementary. And
I think that race was it 76? I would have to go back and check, but it was certainly in the 70s. I was teaching at Lansdowne High School.
If you give me the names of the people that ran second, third, and fourth, I'll tell you. But John Coulihan was from your side of town, right?
No doubt. The Lion of Halethorpe.
The Lion of Halethorpe.
Nicknamed Ham, one of the all-time great guys.
John Coulihan is the reason we're here, that I'm here. John Coulihan got my parents custody of me. So it's pretty complex if you're going to ask about my background, because really how I became an Aparicio and am an Aparicio and was raised by two people born in 1919, one in South Carolina, whose grandfather was a Civil War hero on the other side, a Confederate hero. My mother's grandfather has a statue in the square in Abbeville, South Carolina. My father was raised in the coal mines of Scranton, Pennsylvania in the 1920s.
What did your dad beat into your head? Each and every
integrity day. And fairness and playing fair and being honest and being on the up and up, and that was the right way to do things. My father was very, very straight in that way, right? So I was raised with so my father didn't gamble on horses. My father wasn't a gambler, wasn't much of a drinker, carouser. My father was very straight-laced. My parents never drove, so they took streetcars, trolleys, the bus. I took the bus I had a monthly bus card. My father had a bus card. My father got out of bed every morning at 4:15, was out the door every morning at 4:45. He got the 5:05 bus, transferred from the 23 to the 10, worked at the rod mill and the steel mill at Bethlehem Steel. That was my childhood in the 70s and early 80s and he was an older man. I mean, my dad was born in 1919. So that's what I was raised with in the 70s. And I guess all that happened. My parents lost their son in a drowning incident that I know you found out about later on. And I was a replacement child for my parents. And I guess it took me until I was 35 years old, well into my marriage, quite frankly, and a little bit of self-soothing to figure it all out. But so I was a replacement child for my parents. And my parents were trying to adopt after they lost their child, because there weren't social services in 1969 when your son drowns in Delaware and doesn't come home from a weekend vacation with the in-laws. And so I came along, and my parents had a lot of off-the-field issues, alcoholism, a lot of cultural issues because of my parents being from Venezuela. And I was raised by my father, my Scranton father, to read early and to achieve early. My father was very teacher-oriented. My father would have been a teacher. My father had perfect penmanship. My father had perfect handwriting. My father wanted every T crossed, every I dotted. My, you know, everything was measured with my father. But more than that, I was a high achiever as a kid, and you know that. I mean, I graduated high school when I was 16. I skipped a grade when I was young. I read newspapers when I was 3 years old.
You were not your typical 16-year-old, fair to say.
I was a different kind of kid. So, and my father loved that about me. My father loved that I soaked up knowledge and that I had a growth mindset at 4 or 5 to read and learn. And I love sports, and he loved sports. And I was the bat boy on the baseball team. My cousin was in Major League Baseball, and I'm at Memorial Stadium.
For those who don't know, Luis Aparicio, go Google him, cousin.
He's big in Chicago.
Here's a test for you. You're good at this stuff. What was Luis's number when he played for the Orioles?
11.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
I have the jersey in the closet.
Wanted to make sure you knew, because my favorite player at one point in time also wore number 11.
Who was that?
He has a street named after him in Timonium.
Doug DeSensei's? No. Who?
Gus?
Gus Triandos.
There you go.
My father loved Gus Triandos.
Loved Gus. That's why they named a street after him.
My father loved Gus Triandos. He loved all the Orioles.
So I'm going back
to my father loved baseball, right? So my father my father loved sports. My father saw Babe Ruth play on the train, in New York in the 30s, right? Like, so my background because of baseball wasn't because of being an Aparicio. It was because I was raised by an Irishman from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who loved boxing, basketball, baseball, all of the, but not horse racing, but the traditional sports. And my dad lost his son, and I'm 4 years old, and he wanted to be involved in sports and found solace in mentoring young men through baseball. My dad was an umpire.
I remember you telling those stories.
I still have my dad's clicker.
Well, as I told you after your mom's funeral, I heard so many stories that day. And again, as people get to know you and what might be motivating you for Baltimore Positive, heard so many stories from your stepbrothers and sisters about this incredible void that you filled in the life of your mom and dad after this incredible tragedy, that it really gave additional insight into who you are and what motivates you. And as you said, your dad, think about it in terms, Nestor, of Baltimore Positive. You said your dad talked about integrity. Your dad talked about working hard.
My dad was a member of the union. My dad came here because of the war, right? So I told you, my father had nothing in Scranton, Pennsylvania, 1929. Economy's gone to hell. FDR, New Deal, all that stuff, the war. And my father wound up in Martin Marietta, like so many other people, during that period of time. And met my mother at a Washington Senators game. My mother was a PBX operator coming from the South to Washington, D.C. My father met her in Washington, and they got married at Mount Carmel in beautiful Baltimore County. They got married at Mount Carmel, and they lived in Mars Estates right next to Pizza John's. Where's my Pizza John's cup?
Here we go.
Right next to Pizza John's.
We've got the Pizza John's cup.
We're going to tell these stories to Dutch, Chosen Hands Corner.
And Dutch will know all of these places. And
I never talked to Dutch in my life.
You're in for a treat. And again, on May the 2nd at Pizza John's, 5 o'clock.
Swabbing for the Bone Marrow Registry, 15% of everything. Do you know this? 15% of everything we sell that night goes to There Goes My Hero.
What a more important cause than swabbing to try to cure leukemia. But I want to go back again. So you've got these early lessons from Dad, integrity, honesty, hard work. And that truly was, for me, that captures that generation.
Well, that's all I witnessed every morning of my life.
I remember my kids always tease me because when I really like a book, particularly if I'm on the beach, I tend to read the book out loud to everybody else who's sitting on the beach. So a number of summers ago, I was reading Tim Russert's book about his dad. Came out around Father's Day that year. It was called Big Russ and Me. To this day, it's one of my favorite books ever. And Tim Russert was talking about his dad in Buffalo, not unlike your dad, just getting up, working hard every day.
Russert was an Oriole fan, right?
Russert was, an O's fan.
He was an Oriole fan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I met him once in Fort Lauderdale.
And he was talking about his dad working on a garbage truck and just getting up and busting his tail, each and every day because it was the right thing to do. So those are the lessons that you took from that. And then you get into school.
Well, you met me at 13.
Well, I was just going to talk about that. So let's talk about, because I also have this.
I was a handful, again, man.
Yes, he was. But a few of us took him under our wing. But
thank God for that.
As a former educator, and it certainly is true for me, when I look back, I was thinking about it this week in terms of teachers that had had an impact on me. Talk a little bit about, particularly in your high school years, a teacher or two that had an impact on you that when you look back and you say, I'm a better person because I knew that teacher. Who comes to mind?
Some teachers, first off, he never taught me. So part of Baltimore
never
Positive,
did.
Where I'll bring this in, I don't know your whole background, but you taught social studies, right?
I did.
So, but you never taught me. So this is not a
leading
question.
When I got to Dundalk, I was a guidance counselor and then an assistant principal.
You know, I guess one of the things I struggled with at Holabird, which was probably one of the worst times of my life until my wife got cancer, and until you've been through ups and downs of business and the economy and losing your mother, and you know, losing my father was a terrible time for me. But I was young, right? And I was small, and in my elementary school, there were 5 girls for every guy. We got to Holabird, and now I'm 10 years old in 7th grade, right? Literally. And kids were much bigger than me. And 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, there were a lot of kids there that were not going to graduate, that were going to go to jail, right? Like, literally.
Well,
like,
it's a difficult time.
And those
time.
Kids get in the way of kids like me, who would have loved to have gone to Harvard or Yale or Dartmouth, or even at that time, I wanted to go to Penn State because I like John Cappelletti and I saw Joey Song and all that stuff. So and Joe Pa and how that turned out, right? But at that point, I liked football schools and I wanted to go to Penn State in 1981 or 82. And I wanted to be a journalist. That's all I ever wanted to be. Literally, all I ever wanted to be from the time
I saw
Richie.
That was crystal clear.
The day
you
met me, all I ever wanted
on.
To do.
There was no
this
doubt.
Is all I ever wanted to do.
There was no
How
doubt.
How about that? With the day you met me, I was 13. This is all I ever wanted to do, and this is all I've ever done.
Right. There's no doubt. And I always tell the story that I tried to tell you how it was going to work and how it had to be a progression. And actually, this ties to what you want to do with Baltimore Positive as well, because I told you to be more patient, take your time. You had to work your way through, and you said, I'm going down and I'm going to work. And the next thing I know, you're down working the night shift. And the next thing I know, you're covering rock and roll. And the next thing I know, you're nationally syndicated. So patience has never been your virtue. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very, very. We got to get stuff done. Governor Shaver would say, do it now.
Right. One of your heroes, right?
Do it now.
One of your heroes.
Yeah. And I'm sorry I didn't spend more time with him when he was alive, because he really liked me. He took my calls, Governor Shaver.
There was the one guy that really liked you.
Ehrlich liked me too for a little while until I went anti-Trump.
Now,
Bob, if you're out there, Kendall, I'm still here. It's okay. I like you. I don't like Trump.
Go back to the teacher.
But the teacher. So this is important. So in my ninth grade year of junior high, because I went to junior high, we went 7th, 8th, 9th, and I only went to high school 10th, 11th, 12th. So in ninth grade year, on the day when they bring you, I'll never forget, it was a blue form. It was baby blue. It was like this color here, like my strategic. It was this color blue. So it wasn't white or pink, and it was a little heavier stock, and this was really important. This was the day you were going to fill out your electives for high school. And the teacher we had that day was a substitute teacher. And you remember ninth grade substitute teacher. I just told you, Holabird was a horrific experience. It was a good life experience, but it sucked. I mean, I hated grades, bad kid, just puberty. It sucked. But the Orioles almost won the World Series. But so for me, all I ever wanted to do was be a journalist, be a writer, and the blue form comes. And Mr. Bating, who was Melissa Bating's father, his name is Marty Bating. Marty worked at the News American in the printer shop. And this used to be the hot metal, and it turned into being like an X-Acto knife artist, cutting in the pages that became the newspaper. And Marty Bating was our substitute teacher. Everybody just knew Mr. Bating. And he was the guy that would let you play flick it football. And he was the guy you didn't throw spitballs at because he was kind of cool and would kind of like say, look, we're not going to learn anything right now. I don't want you to, he doesn't want to hear this. we're not going to learn anything today, but you're not going to terrorize me, and I'm at least going to make you better humans in the next 45
minutes,
right? Yeah,
it doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy.
It was in Hollaburg. You were not involved, okay? We're going to put that on Ron Sanders, okay? It's his fault. So, Mr. Baiting that day, I get the blue form, and it says pick your electives for the things you want, and pick three. You know, you get to circle what you want to do, and all I ever wanted to do, I was a good writer. Kevin Eck and I used to put together fake wrestling magazines where his mom would typeset them. We have them, literally. We have these old Dusty Rhodes. Yeah. Because all we wanted to do was write. We wanted to be sports writers, and all we did was read the sports section.
That's the Kevin Eck of WWF fame.
The right, Baltimore Sun Kevin Eck, right? So all we ever did was read the newspaper and respond to the sports section and talk about sports and think about sports. We may have had a couple of pools. We may have had a couple of March Madness brackets with dollar pools that we all put a dollar in and maybe $130 or $140. Ninth grade, 10th grade. So this is Buck Williams and, you know, just to put a little sports air on it. So that day I get the blue form and it said, what do you want to do? And I circled journalism, speech, Louise Gatesy. And I probably circled, I don't know, something else that had something to do with something I was interested in or I thought I was interested in. But journalism was all I was interested in. So when I got my form that I was going to high school for orientation, you get the little official letter and you get the class, the name, the classroom, the periods, right? You know, first period, second period, third period. And first thing you do is call all your friends and say, L-E-I Liefert, Liefert. Does anybody I know Liefert? Monday. Does anybody know Monday? Stockett. Anybody know Stockett? So we call all the older brothers
now
and sisters.
You're mentioning, by the way, the Hall of Fame of Dundalk High School. I mean, these are Hall of Fame. These are the people that make you feel warm and fuzzy about education because they're difference makers.
Let each fellow join us.
Please.
Echo far and near.
I apologize for that.
We will ever sing in triumph.
All the owls are joining you all across the state
march
of Maryland.
March on Dundalk, march right onward till we reach our post.
All right, back to your teachers.
So I get the teachers, and I'm going to high school, and I'm 13. It's the summer of 82. We pull up in front of the big Dundalk High School where there had been some racial divide in 1981. There had been some racial unrest. There had been in May of 1981, look it up, kids, in the Dundalk Eagle. There were some problems. And,
Let me mention that for me.
People were afraid of going to Dundalk. I was supposed to go to Kenwood. Did you know that? When the cluster broke up and my father lobbied to make sure Colgate stayed open and Eastwood got closed and not Grange or Norwood or Patapsco Neck, which went under, my father was very involved in all this in the 70s. I mean, so much so that it's at hand. I don't have to Google it, right? So this was when Venetoulas was running a county, probably before Hutchinson ran the county. They shut down Eastwood and turned it into, I think, some sort of second special ed school, and then it became a police center. But they were trying to close Colgate. So the year after I left Colgate, all the kids from Eastwood got bused to Colgate. So now elementary school kids, six-year-old kids, had to get on buses, something I never did. I walked with my lunch pail. And that was a big deal in Dundalk in 1978. So for me, I always believed I was going to Kenwood because my mother, my stepbrother, everybody from Colgate went to Kenwood. All the older brothers. But in 79 and 80, the district changed, and all of a sudden, we were going to get sent to Dundalk. Ooh,
which was
controversial.
My parents didn't want me going to Dundalk. Well, let me tell you what's interesting about that. And again, there's so many issues that we're going to talk about as we move forward. But the importance of communities coming together, the importance of celebrating the diversity, which is Baltimore County today. One of the reasons that Dundalk historically had those issues, and I love Dundalk High School, spent some of the best years of my life there, and I can remember it. It started to change a bit by the time I got there, but historically, and you'll remember this, having gone to Hollaburg, two schools came together at Dundalk at that time when you came to Dundalk.
Well, North Point Junior went out as well.
And North Point.
Stricker had air conditioning.
Most of Stricker went to Patapsco. But Hollaburg students and Dundalk Middle students came together. And as crazy as this sounds today, back then, for many of the students that came to Dundalk High from Hollabird Middle. It was the first time they had been in school or encountered or became friends with African-American students. The community was segregated, and that's an amazing...
A million percent true. Right. And I'll tell you what, this is a good time to take a break here. Don Moeller is the former Baltimore County Executive. I am Nestor. This is WNST, but it's also Baltimore Positive. And the launch of what we're doing with Dutch Rupersburger, we're going to be at Pizza John's on May 2nd. We're going to take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to pick that can we pick that conversation up? Because I want to talk about those teachers. I want to talk about my first day meeting you and how that affected me. And I want to absolutely pick the conversation up right where we left off, which was, and it really starts in the lunchroom, at Dundalk High School, where I learned a lot about the world, but it took me probably 30 years after to really fully accept what's going on. And my role in it. And
No doubt about it.
All right, Don Moeller, I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST.net. All of what you'll hear in Baltimore Positive can be found at BaltimorePositive.com. You can subscribe. Barbara Mikulski's coming later in the month. We're going to be sitting down with Freeman Hrabowski from UMBC later on in the month. We'll have more details. My Twitter, his Twitter, Moeller Communications, WNST.net. Stick around. We're going to talk about important stuff, deep stuff, non-sports related material. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.